This podcast is brought to you by Scrum Gathering Canada. Learn more at scrumgathering.ca.
Hi, this is Ron Jeffries. You're listening to the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I am this evening's co-host, Jay Hursko, and joining me is fellow board member Ryan Lockard. Say hello, Ryan.
Yo, yo, yo.
And straight from the other side of the globe, from Australia, we have coalition member Brad Stokes. Brad, thank you for joining us.
Hey, no worries. Hi.
Thank you again. So, tonight's topic is safe demystified. So we had a coalition post not too long ago where we called out four topics, and Brad was one of the lucky respondents. And Brad came back with, explain this safe thing to me. I'm not doing it. I don't really get it. And Brad, before the show even started, you had a couple of remarks about where this question came from. So you want to give a little bit more background into where this line of questioning is even coming from?
Absolutely. So I was looking at the safe thing. I've read about it online. You certainly listened to the podcast. I know safe 4.5 came out fairly recently. And every time I've looked at safe, I look at it, I think it looks like the Deloitte Agile placemat. This thing just does not fit in my head. I cannot get this in such a way that it actually makes sense to me. It looks so, so complicated. And I just don't see how it can be quote-unquote agile.
So safe to say, Brad, you've never worked in a safe shop before, right?
Very safe to say that.
Okay, safe, pun intended.
Yeah, I figured.
Good one.
So I think just from a context perspective, I worked in one safe shop. It was a relatively small organization where I'm sure we'll dig into where safe fits and where it doesn't fit. Jay, I think you have a little bit more of a verbose experience with the SAFE framework in larger enterprise.
Yeah, so I'm on my second organization that's utilizing SAFE. The first organization was an international bank, and we actually went agile before we used SAFE, so that adds a neat little twist to it. And the company I'm currently in now is rolling out SAFE for the entire enterprise, and it's also serendipitous in the sense that our vendor, who's an international software vendor, is doing SAFE as well. So I'm in the truly bleeding edge land of I'm trying to roll out SAFE, our vendor's trying to roll out SAFE, and we're trying to deliver code together. So it's quite an interesting environment to be working in. Unfortunately, Andrew Leff was going to be joining us. Unfortunately, he's delayed. He is an actual SAFE certified. I think it's an SPC, which is a program coordinator or whatever. He's the guy that's certified to teach it. I have been through my SAFE course, which is the CSM equivalent, which is the SAFE Agilist, and passed that brutal exam. So I have a little bit more dyed-in-the-wool experience than Ryan, but the reason why all three of us are here is because we think we can give a pretty good conversation around the topic.
So, yeah, I take a train almost. I've taken a train almost every day for the last 10 years of my life, but I have no release train engineer certification nor any other SAFE certification under my belt. So I'm speaking more from the, I would say, the relative outsider perspective, although I've been in a SAFE shop, and I'm going to add some color to this conversation, I believe.
Okay. So with that being said, with the preemptive Ryanism coming, the first question Brad had was, keeping it simple, what is SAFE? So for the uninitiated, SAFE stands for the Scaled Agile Framework, which is a methodology to scale agile practices and principles inside an organization. Brad did allude to the big picture, which is that giant almost process diagram / org chart looking thing, which is basically a simplification of all the practices and principles contained therein to scale agile through an enterprise. It is one of many scaling frameworks. There's LESS, there's DAD, there's Nexus, there's Enterprise Scrum, Scrum of Scrums. There's a whole bunch out there. And for some reason, it seems to be that SAFE has experienced a large amount of adoption. Part of it may be because of the fully baked picture and all the certs that go along with it. Part of it may be it just seems most mature. Truth be told, another part of it might be the fact that there are tools you can buy out of the box, such as Rally and version 1, that support SAFE native. So that
really
could
good, be. Really good marketing works too, right? If you call something safe, it's non-threatening to enterprise?
True. But when as someone who's been through an adoption, it is quite threatening because it does force you to reevaluate almost everything. Right. So that's the oversimplified explanation of what is safe. Now, Brad, one of the first questions you had here was, is safe a religion? So can you expand on that thought a little bit?
Okay, so safe seems to be one of those things that's like almost everything in the Agile universe, polarizing. So the safe practitioners tend to be, yes, this is the holier than thou, this will solve all our problems, our woes, and everything else. And it seems like there's almost a religious zeal that goes along with this. I've certainly heard some practitioners go all in, and from the outside, it's like, whoa. We've got this cult-like thing almost happening. It's not the cargo agile, but it's definitely entertaining to watch. It's just a bit mystifying from the outside why there's such religious fire involved in this thing.
I like that you call it religious fire, because cargo cult agile is what we usually call dogmatist. And when I look at the folks that are full bought into safe, oftentimes it's like the Scientology of Agile for me. I'm looking at the big picture right now. I have it in full safe mode, which is the complete picture, right? And the thing that stands out to me is on the surface, looking at the image, there are a lot of roles, there's a lot of process, and there's a whole lot of what I consider to be heavyweight structure wrapped around something that we're calling Agile. And to me, that just seems a little bit offensive to the understanding that I have, the core values that I understand shook out of the Agile Manifesto. I mean, if you take a step back and we talk about what safe is from a marketing perspective, it's exactly what Jay said. It's something that the enterprise can absorb that doesn't really challenge the operating models that are currently in space. Like, we take a PMO and we show them something like SAFE, and they're like, oh, cool, we can actually see how this works in our context, because there are all of these non-engineering roles in something that we're calling a technology framework. Then if you peel the onion back a little bit further and you look at, you know, the architects of SAFE, and you figure out who are these guys that, and I guess so probably some girls that are involved in building this framework out, and you look into their history, they actually kind of came out of the rational unified process world, right? The RUP world, which was the catalyst for the Agile movement in the first place. So to me, when I look at it, it's not lightweight. It's not very adaptive. It has DevOps now littered throughout it, but it doesn't actually embrace what I consider to be the DevOps mindset. So for me, I look at SAFE as a way for the enterprise to call themselves Agile without really changing the model in which they work today, which is very much structured waterfall process.
So I will bootstrap off that statement. I do think, to Ryan's first point about dogmatists, you're absolutely right. And Brad, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of people drinking the Kool-Aid, but that's like everything in Agile. There are some people who are zealots when it comes to no estimates. There are other people who that goes against every fiber of their being. Much can be said about a lot of the things we run into in the lean Agile space. Now, I will say this, as someone who's been through two companies trying to use this, the reason why Ryan is averse to it is one of the reasons why I think it can also be successful is if you try and take a standard rigid waterfall shop, which is large, enterprise level, right? And you try to impose, we're going Agile. That terrifies everybody. I think we talked about this in a previous podcast, inflicting Agile, the whole thought of, well, I can't answer all your questions, but just go and do it. It usually is a bit terrifying, and it really comes down to how people deal with change. So when you do look at this thing, it is a little bit overwhelming. When I first saw it, I had the same reaction as Ryan. I giggled and went, what the hell is this? But as someone who's been through one and halfway through the second adoption, I can sort of see how this is a step towards agility in the sense that it introduces a lot of the concepts that an organization that wants to be agile, that wants to utilize this iterative methodology to deliver value quicker, will work. And I'm not a sales guy. I'm not a safe rep. I can see where this is an interim step. However, to me personally, and I've had this conversation with multiple people, I don't think safe, if you adopt full safe, right, if you look at that big picture and you adopt the whole thing, I don't think that's a journey complete. I don't think that's your organization being agile. That's your organization starting its journey into full business agility. And I think this could be used as a launching pad in order to deliver some really different things for your organization, but it depends on your culture and it depends how willing you are to change. It's the whole shuhari thing, right? So you've learned the principles, you've learned the practices, now you got the principles. A next step in an organization would be a re-safe organization, which you're scaling Agile to your own ends. Does that sound crazy?
It sounds interesting, but the thing that I think you said was really important is it's the first step. How many organizations look at this and say, oh, we're now Agile, and stop? Like that's where it kind of freaks me out a little bit, is we've got this scaled Agile framework that we're saying this is the first step away from waterfall, but if it's the only step away from waterfall, we're not in all that much better of a position. Maybe a little bit for the dev teams, but you've still got this chunk of framework that looks so dogmatic and so rigid sitting around things. If you're not taking that next step, how does an organization then say, oh, we've started our safe journey, but we're not finished? Or is it we've gone to, say, 4.5 now, we're safe 3.0, let's do the next iteration of safe, not let's find the next thing that's going to work for our organization. That's where it kind of scares me.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple things. There's a couple things I want to tag into this. First, Jay, I really appreciate the fact that you use the word culture. Changing the operating culture of an organization is difficult. And the approach that I've seen with SAFE, and the approach that I think Dean himself and Dean Leffingwell and some of the other SAFE thought leaders talk about, is it is a really good concept to apply enterprise level change to culture. For me, that's a very dangerous statement to make, because culture is made up of people and process. And to me, when I look at SAFE, what it is a very people and process structured approach to changing an enterprise without ever actually gaining appreciation for the existing people, process, and technology that's in play. So for there to be a stamped out version, now at least they've gone with several different flavors of SAFE, I still think it's an ignorant and arrogant stance to take to say that there's a process that we can apply to the enterprise that will help get you to Agile, when that doesn't actually, like, you're, I don't know, like, we've gone through the Agile Manifesto author review. We've talked to relative thought leaders throughout the Agile stack. And I don't know that there's any one framework that makes you Agile. And I would strongly say that SAFE is probably the furthest one out there. The one thing that I look at SAFE with a little bit of a smile on my face about is the fact that they're willing to version, right? Brad just talked about version 3 to version 4 to version 4.5. At least there is that inspect adapt stance that they've embraced. That said, the inspection and adaption continues to make it bigger and further away from what I consider to be the heart of Agile. Head tip to Alistair. I think it's actually getting a little further and further away. I don't know, one of the class one problems I have with the SAFE approach is I look at this from an engineering perspective, right? And I look at the SAFE framework and I question to myself, what is this doing to improve the engineering practices of an enterprise or even a team? Let's just boil it down to a team. And I look at it and I see all of these roles and all of, like, I started working on a presentation that I'm going to be giving in New York next month. Shameless plug. And I started actually circling all of the roles on the SAFE framework that are non-engineering focused roles. And to me, they're the jazz hand roles that go into the technical and the engineering teams. And it's staggering. If you ever actually go through this exercise and you look at the what I consider to be value add roles versus the not fully value adding roles, it's almost 8-1. And to me, it's like, why do we have all of these governance? Why do we have all of these layers of artificial structure in a framework other than to make organizations feel artificially, pun intended, safe about a framework that they're adopting?
So I'll play devil's advocate on this one and I'll rebut it. The argument I would first give, and I really wish Lef was here to argue with me. The first step I'll give is all these, there are, I'll give you this, Ryan, there are a lot of non-engineering roles. And I know you're engineering DevOps XP, that's near and dear to your heart. And there aren't a lot of that here. However, I think in regard, under the lens of this is a step change towards a more agile environment, I think these are all people that currently exist in your organization. So there is a lot of middle management. Harvard Business Review just had that giant study about how many, what the percentage of managers is. I think it was something as four managers to every two employees, or some insane ratio. It was in the HBR. I'll put it in the show notes. So if you're thinking of a step change, that does sort of make sense, because now you're fitting people into their roles before you figure out where you want to go in the environment. Now, to Brad, to your point where you asked, do people actually take that next step? Do companies actually use SAFe, roll it out, and then say, oh, okay, well, now we've transcended, let's go on to the next thing? That I really don't know. I know that the first organization that I started started SAFe with has almost gotten away from it. They created their own scaled framework. I think it was something data something lean agile, or I forget, there was a funny acronym for it. But they've sort of shied away from it. The company I'm at now, I think we're too juvenile in our adoption to really even say if we're going to get there. But I think it's in the cards. But you're right. I don't know if there's any. I would be curious if there's any studies out there that show how many companies introduce SAFe and then pivot away from it. That's an interesting way to think about it.
Okay. Now, look, the other question that springs to mind is that SAFe adoption, like listening to 4.5, the podcast and the bits and pieces on 4.5, there are bits that you can have, there are bits that you can take out. But people that adopt it, are they adopting this wholesale? They're just grabbing everything and saying, we must do all. We will be the portfolio management specialists within Agile. Or are they actually taking that bit part approach where let's take what works? Like, at my heart, I'm a pragmatist. If it works for an organization, I have no big problem with it. It's just, it kind of needs to work for the organization. So are people actually doing that? Is that something that is really being communicated with this framework, or what's the go?
So I find one thing that's interesting. I'm sorry, Jay, I jumped in here, but the
No, go on.
You keep saying this is a step towards agility for large enterprise. And to me, when I hear that, I think you've said it about two or three times now, and in my mind, I automatically jump to an experiment. This is an experiment to run to see if we can become more agile, if we can become more lean, if we can deliver faster time to market with better velocity and all the buzzwords that, if you're keeping a bingo scorecard at home, I probably just hit about three or four for you.
At least.
Maybe a couple more. If you get the free square, you might have hit bingo. But here's the thing. Experiments are meant to be short, and they're meant to, you know, give rapid feedback loops, and they're meant to be inexpensive from which you can pivot. And I think when you look at SAFe, installing a framework like that into an enterprise is extremely expensive. It doesn't matter if you're talking about a 4-team enterprise up to a multi-hundred team enterprise. You're fundamentally changing roles, and you're fundamentally changing the way the work gets done. I was going to say process, but I'd actually be contradicting myself with that. And to me, that's not an experiment, right? That is a change management initiative at the enterprise scale, which is both risky and expensive.
True. So let me say this. It is an experiment, and you're absolutely right. And it's a long-running, heavy-handed, expensive experiment. But I also think that statement ties into what Brad's question was, do companies do this wholesale? Do they bolt this big picture on top of the org? And based on my experience, no. So I'll give you an example. In my current environment, I walked into a waterfall shop. They had always done waterfall. There'd been an attempt or two to do quote unquote gratuitous air quotes agile, but it never really worked out. So they were back to your stand up, straight up initiation, planning, execution, control, closure, 5-phase gate process from the PMI. And what have they introduced? Well, they've introduced the whole idea of sprints and iterations, which you can do without SAFe. They've introduced the idea of enablers. They've introduced features. They've introduced program increments, so 10-week delivery windows. We've introduced stuff like the architectural runway. We've introduced things like the product owner, the product manager. We have other teams, other streams that have actually realized that they do need a release train engineer. So my experience has been nobody does it. It's like Scrum. Nobody does it straight out of the box, definitely by the book. And I know I've just pissed a bunch of people off by saying that, but you need to be pragmatic and you need to pick and choose what works. Do I think that my company is a safe shop? No. Do I think we're adopting some of the safe principles and practices to get us more agile than we were? Absolutely. We still haven't solved for the continuous CI/CD pipeline monster, with a large enterprise organization with a bunch of legacy systems, some of which are older than me, and probably older than Ryan too. It gets hairy. But I do think that there's some benefit there if you pick and choose what works. And I'm a big fan of every step towards Agile away from Waterfall is a step in the right direction. As long as you have the appetite to have that long tail, I think you can bear some fruit.
First of all, I'm not old. I'm seasoned and experienced.
And I was just wondering whether he meant Harry as you or the implementation. I mean,
you've seen my avatar. I am far from Harry other than my face. No, so Jay, I know this is in the show notes, but I'm actually going to ask you something a little off the cuff. And it's something that I probably should have added in before we got on the call today. But can you define for me a problem statement that brings about an organization to adopt SAFe? What is it? What is an ecosystem or a problem within an enterprise that makes one say, oh, SAFe could potentially solve for this? And I'll give you a little bit of time while you put your thoughts together, because to me, when I think about organizations that tend to adopt a SAFe framework, it's usually organizations that want to pretend to be going towards a more agile way of working without really changing a whole hell of a lot. So I'm kind of curious if and it's a shame that Andrew isn't on the call, because I feel like he would have some strong position and we'd have a really nice argument right now.
But yeah, he'd argue more with you better than I would. Let's be honest.
That's fair. But like, channel your inner Lef and, is there something, and maybe, I'm willing to accept that I'm ignorant to this. And I'm curious to hear if there is something that I'm not considering about why organizations, what problem we can define where SAFe is a potential answer.
So with little prepping off the top of my head, first I'll give you this, Ryan. It's very hard to come up with a problem statement that can't be solved by just utilizing Agile and good Agile practices, good XP, good Scrum. So I guess if I had to make an argument, and I know Lef is going to eventually listen to this in the car and be yelling at me at his head unit.
I'm excited for that.
As he drives his car off the road. I would think this. So let me try a problem statement. So this problem statement would be, our organization needs to find a way to deliver value iteratively, and yet we are so large and so dispersed, plain old Scrum will not work for us.
Okay. And I think that is, I think off the top of your head, that is a damn good problem statement, because that's the one that I've experienced time and time again, both in enterprise, in training as an independent, and in consulting. And the challenge statement that I would throw down is, there are very large enterprises that we look up to. I'm going to point my hat towards Google, towards Facebook, towards Amazon. And while a lot of their engineering practices are kind of hidden, it would be safe to say, pun intended again, I feel like I keep doing that.
We need beautiful. To put like a sound effect in post. So every time somebody says that, there's like a reggae horn or something.
Cowbell. I think cowbell. But it's safe to say, if these large enterprises that we generally look at as the case study for disruption, for innovation, and for, a prototype of how software organizations want to run, if they were using something like SAFe, we would know about it, because that would be littered all over the Scaled Agile website. The only one that I look at when I say, okay, they're using some type of scaling framework, and it's known, is Spotify, because they open source the model that they work in. And they even explicitly say, we're not saying anybody else should use this. This is what works for us today, right? Like, I struggle at organizations that like to brand themselves as technology companies or technology focused enterprises, and they look at SAFe as a solution when there are other options available. Like, if you look at Amazon, for example, they used to call their entire monolithic application their monolithic architecture. They used to call that the Death Star. It was this giant ball of shit. If you talk to anybody from AWS, from Amazon retail, about the way the system existed pre-2006, 2007, they used to call it the Death Star because it was this giant ball, right? And what they started doing is they started adopting modern engineering practices. Yes, I'm the engineer guy. I'm going to talk about these things till I either get shut down by the internet version of the FCC or the Agile Uprising gets tired of me spewing my rhetoric. But if you start adopting things that are more difficult to embrace than a pretty picture that prints out on A1 paper and you can slap on the wall, and you start digging into real problems, if you start digging into monolithic architecture and you start adopting more of a microservice-based approach and you start embracing things like containerization, orchestration, and core engineering practices, and you start building those things out into the fabric of your organization, you can solve a lot of the things that Safe pretends to solve for. You can write DevOps all over that damn place, Matt, and it doesn't actually talk to the real DevOps engineers in the world. You're never going to attract the bleeding edge engineers to an organization that's running Safe simply because it's a dinosaur. It's a dinosaur built on top of the previous dinosaur. And at some point, the enterprise, I think, is going to become wise to this and start adopting more modern practices.
So I'm going to give 2 points, and then we'll go to the next topic. First thing, I'm going to give Ryan the shout out to that, hearkening to the old Amazon architecture. There's a brilliant blog post out there about how Amazon undid the Death Star and their SOA architecture. It was written by one of their engineers, so I'll put that in the show notes. As a non-developer, that was a great read. But as far as your remark about if there were people using Safe, we would know about it. I think you're right. However, I also think the future is, we talked about this in a previous podcast, is meta frameworks. It's pulling from Safe, pulling from DAD, pulling from Less, what works for you. And like I said, using this as a jump off point to include all the things that work for your organization, because it's not one size fits all.
The honest truth there is, what organization is truly, truly agile? Like, any enterprise that's big enough has so many layers of bureaucracy and so many things. I need to send in a PAF for a $5 expenditure. These things aren't uncommon. So, you know, even if you say I'm fully Safe and I'm fully agile, my experience has been that that really isn't the case. You talk to the guys in, say, the Commonwealth Bank, which is one of our big banks over here, and they'll say, look, the guys at the top have got it, the guys in the middle kind of have it, but the middle management don't have it at all, and we're just going to work at 100% pace, so we're going to do internal billing. So we need to be 90% billable inside an agile framework, so we're billing everybody, every other team for their time. Great. We have no room for Slack. We've got one guy doing product manager for 10 different teams. I mean, is it any difference with the Safe rollout? Is it we're doing Safe in a safe way? You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's actually safe or agile or any of this.
No, I mean, and the same can actually be said about Scrum, right? Like,
yeah,
you can take Scrum and apply some of the most oppressive cultural stances to it as possible. And, you know, if you look at the State of Agile report, Scrum is the most wildly accepted framework that's in play right now. But some of the quote unquote Scrum teams that I've seen are probably some of the most waterfall groups I've ever experienced, because they're not applying pragmatism. They're not implying the actual layer of empiricism. When you talk to Jeff and when you talk to Ken, empiricism is one of the core tenets of Scrum. And quite often that inspect and adapt model and that applied learning is not genuinely applied. So I agree with you, Brad, 100%. I agree with what you just said about Commonwealth Bank and what you said about having one product person representing 10 teams. But as much as I can sit here and smash Safe for the next 2 hours, I'm happy to. that's not a Safe problem. That's an human application problem, right? Of a framework. Yeah, 100%. And they're the hard ones to solve for, right?
Yeah, software is easy, people are hard. It's one of my favorite sayings.
Yeah, software does what you tell it to. People don't.
I've always been a big fan of, if the customer wants something really bad, give them something really bad. So one of the things you brought up, which I thought was an interesting question, was Brad, you asked, there are so many parts to SAFe, and it looks like it from the outside. Is there any reason that the SAFe big picture looks like the Deloitte Agile placemat?
Sure.
We internally, and I could say this, like meeting Ryan, myself, a couple other guys, had a long conversation when that placemat first came out, in the sense that that placemat is one of those things that practitioners like us can actually use and enjoy, because it shows where there's overlaps of commonality when it comes to trains of thought and processes.
Yeah.
Whereas an executive, that's the worst thing to give an executive, right? Because they would see that and their eyes would glaze over and they'd either be overwhelmed and say, what the hell is this? We can't take our organization agile. This is too much. Or they would say, we need to do all of this because this is agile and we need to do it.
Yeah.
Ryan, I know we had a couple of really good heated conversations about that placemat. What are your thoughts?
I think you nailed. No, you got me. I'm thinking before I speak. It's rare. I think you nailed the head right there. It's dangerous when you look at it in whole. The one thing about, you know, the guy, his name is Chris, and I can't think of his last name. The guy from Deloitte that made that the agile placemat that you're referring to. When you look at the entire composition of the work, it's overwhelming. When you actually look at the way that it was intended to be presented, he builds it out. It's not just one giant picture that looks like the subway map of the inner earth. It's it was more of a building aspect. And right or wrong, I don't know that I actually agree with it when it builds out, but the context matters, right? And I think the same thing is true with the SAFe placemat, which I'm going to start calling it. I love that. The context does matter, but at the same time, it's a prescribed way to solve a problem with an ignorant eye towards the symptoms of the problem. If you go back to first principles and you look at things like lean, you're supposed to 70% of a good solution is a well-structured problem statement. And I think when you look at things like either the Deloitte placemat or SAFe or any framework in general, with an ignorant eye towards what the actual problem is that you're solving for, you're not actually solving anything. And I think you can take that statement and run it ad infinitum across any framework or any structure that you approach. It's just a lazy way to go about solving for an enterprise dysfunction.
And like we talked about, culture and people are always the hardest things to solve for. So any attempt to put a complex problem, what is it, H.L. Mencken? For every complex problem, there is a solution that's quick and simple and wrong. I think that was his quote. Brilliant satirist. So going back to some of the questions that you had, Brad, one of them, you had one about the levels. Can we unpack that one?
Sure. Look, there are multiple levels to this thing. So you've got your portfolio management level, you've got your solutions level, you've got the program to actually get it in. There seems to be all these different things that are built on it. When I first looked at this, it was like, oh, is this like a Shuhari thing? I start at level one and work my way through and make this monolith sort of thing? Or is it more just these are things that I can add on and I build up? But I'm kind of actually looking at the placemat at the moment. It shall now forever be known as a SAFe placemat. And the thing that really strikes me is I don't see those areas where you actually get your team out and you walk the floor, do the Jemba walk with your customers and that sort of thing. It just looks like we're building structure on structure on structure. I just can't get past that aspect of it, I think. There wasn't really a question in there, I admit.
No.
So I will say this, Ryan, I don't mean to step on you. So we talked about the different levels and you're scaling Agile through an organization. It's not as much a Shuhari as my interpretation is. It's more of as you go through strata in your organization, you want to apply these different streams. I will be quite honest and in admitting that every place I've ever worked, we get the team level down pat. The program level starts to really come together. I don't think we've gotten to the large solution. Maybe we've sort of made the sine wave overcome that solution train, because in my current role, I'm using SAFe. I have a supplier using SAFe. So there is that there with solution demos or whatnot. The portfolio piece, I wish Lef was here, but I don't know of anybody that's ever gotten to that level of maturity with that whole lean portfolio management triforce there and everything. I don't know anybody that's ever gotten there. I want to be conscious of time. I don't want to keep Brad too long. We're trying to keep these episodes well under an hour. So we have a whole bunch of questions, and I definitely think we're going to end up doing a second episode because I think there's more to unpack. But I'm going to actually give this the pitcher's choice. So to you, Brad, I know you had a whole ton of questions that were still – that we didn't even scratch the surface on. Which one, if you had to grab one, would you say let's address that one and then we can wrap it up?
Oh, this is a wonderful thing here. Okay, I'm going to – it's going to be a twofer. There's SAFE. It looks like that the only way that you can understand this thing is by actually trying to do the certification. Cost isn't insignificant. I think it was around $3,000 when I looked at it. You know, it seems to be a lot for a cert that's you're re-upping every couple of years to maintain. Like I paid for my own Scrum thing because there was bits and pieces that I wanted to learn. It wasn't that I wanted the cert. I wanted to learn something, and I really took a lot away from it. But this SAFE thing, it looks like the only way that you can actually, you know, get your foot in the door, through the front door is using the certs. Is there actually value here, or is it again just this monolith that seems so impenetrable until you're actually almost inducted into an organization that's using it? It makes any sense?
So it does. It does make sense that you bring that question up, and you know, I'm not even going to go down the value of certifications, because I think you did service. If you go into a certification course as an opportunity to learn something, more power to you. I've got plenty of certifications, various different disciplines, and every time I go in, it's because I want to learn something more. I've stepped into a consulting role in this past year, and I stepped out of enterprise. And I know when I made that shift, you know, beyond the personal challenges I gave myself about what the hell are you doing, I was getting external challenges from folks saying, if you're going to do this, you have to get SAFE certified. Otherwise, enterprise clients are not going to respect your opinion. And, you know, I looked at that and I said, fair enough, but, you know, I don't feel like I need that certification. I feel like I can speak to the enterprise in terms that they'll understand, and I can get a good perspective into problem solving. That's what I've done my entire life. And I'm sitting here today on this call talking, you know, as if I have some relevance and as a SAFE voice here, but I have no SAFE certifications. I have zero intention to get any SAFE certifications, simply because I don't know that there's any problems that a SAFE certification solves in my personal, professional, or in my consulting life. And you know, nothing against anybody that gets a certification. If you feel like you're going to acquire any information from a SAFE Agilist, from a an SPC4, and this is not a slam on those certifications. I respect anyone that's willing to either use part of their training budget or part of their own money to go out there and improve their brains. Do that. Learn as much as you can. If certification is the fastest way for you to acquire that knowledge, I swear to God, I support that. If reading a book is that way, do that. If actually pulling down a GitHub repository and playing with a new framework or code is the way that you want to learn, hell yes, do that. YouTube, whatever it is, continue to learn. But for me, SAFE certifications has never been something that's going to improve my professional life or my voice in the space. So I kind of look at it as one of many tools that are available to the community, and one that I just don't necessarily enjoy.
Okay, so I'll offer the other side of the coin. So my experience with backing up with Scrum and Agile, that I thought I had my hands wrapped around when I went to my CSM course. I actually thought that while I didn't learn anything new, I thought the course was very beneficial because I got to share the experience with other people in the room, and we were learning together, and we talked about real life experiences of trying to do this thing, this Scrum Master thing. So I thought that was super beneficial. To your question about, do you really need to take a course to understand it? My last job, they said, we're going Agile and we're using SAFE. Well, we're using SAFE. And you look at that, I probably had the same facial expression you had, Brad. You pop up this big pick, the placemat, and you go, well, what the hell is this? I think if you were to click into all the deep links and all the shapes, you could probably get an understanding. But I will say that I sat through 2 days of the SA course I took the exam. It was rough, but I passed it. And I do think that that course really does help. However, 2 days isn't very long when you consider how big the book is and how much is actually here. Even with my pre-existing knowledge of SAFE and Agile, it was still a bit of an uphill battle. So, yeah, I do sort of think, I'll make a definitive statement, I do think that in order to understand the most about SAFE, you would want to take a certification class. However, I also think unless you are working in an organization that is going to adopt SAFE, you are entering the job market and you know that a lot of companies that you've seen are looking for SAFE certifications, or you eventually want to be a consultant and to be an Agile consultant and preach SAFE along with lesson data and all those else, I don't know if I would actually go for the cert unless it was something that my organization was doing, somewhere that my career was driving me, or something that I wanted to get into. Because you're right, it is fairly expensive. I think it is about $3,000 for the SA course. And I think to do an SPC, which is the newest one's 4.5, which is a SAFE instructor, I think that's almost two and a half times that. So it is rather expensive. Granted, if your company covers it, God bless you, let them do it. But I do think, I will cop to that, I do think the course definitely helps understand the concept behind why am I scaling this thing?
Yeah. I mean, that's the big question, isn't it? If you need a course to even understand the fundamentals, how can you say it's truly Agile? That would be the other thing that I would come back with.
Oh, I love you, true. Brad.
True. I mean, I've had people say SAFE is nothing more than Agile for Waterfall, which I don't know if I disagree, but I come from a very weird place. I'm a project manager by role and by nature, so I'm the outlier when it comes to the board meetings we have. And my personal opinion is, again, every step towards agility is a step earned. So I don't necessarily think it's the greatest thing in the world, but I do think there's some benefit there. I definitely picked up some stuff. It sent me down some rabbit holes to learn some new things. And I thought the interview for our listeners, if you go back, Andrew Leff and I got the luxury of interviewing Dean Leffingwell when SAFE 4.5 first rolled out. I thought that was a really interesting interview, especially for me, because we didn't ask him softball questions. We asked about the DevOps stuff. We asked about how come an SBC is now seen as a vital pillar. Isn't that monetization? So he had some really good thoughts on that. So I definitely think that episode dovetails to this one. But yeah, I do see the benefit in the class, but you're right. There's the question of how Agile it actually is.
Cool.
Okay, so we're about out of time. I want to be cognizant of Brad's work day, because I believe while Ryan and I are going to go back to drinking beer, Brad's actually heading off to work.
I'm working from home today, but yes, absolutely.
So I definitely think we're going to pencil in a tentative second episode, because we have way more on the docket that we never even got towards. So as I wrap it up, Ryan, do you have anything you want to plug?
For anybody that's an SPC that wants to punch me in the face, you can find all of my public appearances online at ryanlocker.com in the event space. I have stuff in New York, Philadelphia, I think something in Atlanta and Canada. I'm coming at you. So yeah, there's a bunch of opportunities to tell me I'm stupid and don't know what I'm talking about. Plus there's Twitter at @AgilePHL.
And if you don't want to travel, you can always just send me money and I'll find a way to punch Ryan in the face for you. I'll give you a cheaper rate than airfare. Brad, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I'd probably say three or four things. If you want to catch me on social media, LinkedIn, Bradley M. Stokes on LinkedIn, or Twitter, Brad Stokes, twitter.com, Brad Stokes. I'd say if you're in the Sydney area of a Tuesday morning and you want to go to a great discussion, we have a lean coffee that I go to every Tuesday morning, which is absolutely fantastic in the heart of Sydney. And the final thing is if you're listening to this, you're not part of the coalition, it is a great place to hang out with some really, really clever people. I'm not one of them. I just tend to ask the dumb questions. But honestly, join the coalition, get involved, and really have that conversation with people that are thinking and struggling with the same problems you are. It's been such a freeing experience having that available. So I'd encourage everyone to go along to the coalition and join up on the Agile Uprising site. So yeah.
Yes, thank you. And as for me, you can find me on Twitter at @BackdoorAgile. And you can find me all over the coalition. I seem to be the only one blogging, but we have some changes in the works where we're going to be bringing on some guest bloggers. So there's some excitement there. And like Brad said, please come out to the Coalition, sign up and get in the conversation. We have people who are super senior. We have people who are brand new to Agile. We had one guy sign up. I think he was actually looking for a career change. So it's a great place. It's free to learn and to get some information from people that you would normally pay hundreds of dollars in books or thousands of dollars in courses. With that being said, I want to thank Ryan. I want to thank Brad for joining us quite early in his morning. I want to thank all of our listeners. If you like what you hear, please go back to iTunes and give us a thumbs up. Give us some positive reviews. It does help us when we show up in the search requirements. And once again, on behalf of all the guests tonight, I want to thank everyone, and we will speak to you again soon.
Hey, the place to be next spring is Canada. Our friends up north are throwing a party, a scrum gathering to be exact. Get yourselves to Toronto for March 26th and 27th and enjoy some fun with the exchange rate. Register, sponsor, or submit a session proposal at scrumgathering.ca. The gathering will be in the heart of downtown Toronto. The nearest airports are YTZ and YYZ. Also, a special discount is available to all listeners of our podcast. Use the discount code UPRISING, all lowercase, to get 15% off the regular price of the gathering.